The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Chaz, welcome back to The Grit.
So excited to be here.
October 18th, 2019.
It's a good day.
Shaq Surfing Heritage and Culture Center is where we're hosting today's episode.
If you haven't been, people, get on up here.
It's pretty exciting.
See the Duke Kahanamoku's board. How long did it take you in your life to say Kahanamoku without pausing, without stumbling, just flowing right into Duke Kahanamoku?
I was probably 18 years old, I would say.
What about, can you throw down a good Mele Kalikimaka?
Mele Kamiki. No, I can't. I've never even tried that one.
Mele, you know what Mele Kalikimaka is.
It's like Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
I've heard the song.
Mele Kalikimaka is the thing to say.
Who sings it?
I don't know. Bing Crosby or something?
Oh, I was going to say Don Ho. But
it might be Don Ho.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you know
the Ho Dynasty?
Did you know Don Ho? Yeah, you of course know. Don Ho is actually, is he uncle? Is he grandpa?
I don't know.
He's something though. I mean, he is same Ho as Coco and Mason and Derek and the rest.
Yeah, Mike.
It's really rude to leave out Mike in my running through the host to call
also, him. Also, if they weren't so venerated, we would totally make fun of that last name.
Ho.
H-O. Right?
Except I would make fun of it a little, except for the problem with Ho for me is I've never known how to spell it.
What?
When you see people spell ho, right? When she's a ho, right?
Oh,
starting in like sixth grade or whenever people started getting called hoes, some people did H-O, some people did H-O-E. Both looked wrong, but both were also seemed fine enough. But so the like uncertainty of how to spell ho has always thrown me off of actually using or making fun of ho.
You just go with whore instead?
I go with whore.
So we got a bunch to catch up on.
So much. You're back from a trip.
Yeah, I was actually.
Another one.
Another trip. It doesn't stop. Life traveling only man. Gets busier, man.
You're a traveling man.
I know. I hate to give off the impression that I'm wealthy and just like traveling the world because that's so not the case. My buddy, I posted something about being in Arisara and surfing and he sent it to me and he's like, dude, this gives the wrong impression. Like, what are you just gallivanting the globe?
But you are. I mean, let's just be honest. Let's look at the facts.
Yeah, but I'm not doing it on my own dime. Like, it's all funded by...
Even better.
Like...
Your mom?
No, exactly not my mom. By my employer. You know, it's work-related travel is what it is.
Sure, but how is that worse than pocketing... I mean, than... paying for your own travel.
No, it's better for me. But like my buddy was saying what the impression that it was giving is that like I don't work and that I'm just traveling just to gallivant. And I'm like, no, it's all work related. It's 100% work related.
But you know what they say, do what you love. You never work a day in your life.
No, exactly. I'm definitely not complaining. But this last trip was actually up to see our buddy, Matt Warshaw.
I have so many questions about this trip.
Okay.
Can I just go right into it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so how did you find... Did you stay at Matt Warshaw's house or visit Matt Warshaw's house?
I stayed there.
How beautiful is Matt Warshaw's home?
Perfect.
The little basement down there?
That's where I stayed.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a cave. Like, the low ceilings make it feel actually really, like, warm and cozy.
It's a cozy place.
And it's a little chillier in Seattle.
Did Matt Warshaw, for those who don't know, lives in Seattle. He's the historian of surfing. Surfing's one and only historian. Moved to Seattle. How long ago now? 10 years? Has he been up there 10 years?
I think 8, maybe.
8 years. Moved, relocated, I think somewhere, oh, from San Francisco, yeah. Right?
Yep.
San Francisco. He had lived in Orange County before that. So always coastal California and then on up to Seattle.
Right.
Where he lives to this day on beautiful Queen Anne Hill.
And doesn't surf.
Nope. But he did.
Yes, he did.
He went surfing.
There was an article written about it on Beach Grit.
On Beach Grit.
So he and I talked about that at length. I'm going to publish an episode with him in 2 weeks.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So I have more, I mean, we can keep on with Matt, but I have more questions about Drew, Drew Campion.
So we'll get into that too. But first on Matt, he's living the dream scenario, dude. Like the neighborhood, like you said, Queen Anne is beautiful.
So cute.
It's so cute.
Walk to coffee.
Kid walks to school by himself. You can, all these great little shops. And it's just such a beautiful location too. The house is great. It's like the dream scenario. He's living the dream.
While you are, I mean, I hope that you're well on the way to subletting your apartment at this point, because did you think about Seattle? I mean, did Seattle turn your eye too? Did you think, hey man, I could do this?
No, I could do that later in life.
It's got an international airport though. You could fly.
That's true.
You can gallivant all from SeaTac.
That's true. But I need to surf more frequently than he does.
Okay.
Like, I think the trade-off that he's made, and he says there was no confusion about it at all. He was thrilled to make the trade. But the trade-off is not surfing as often and organizing, centering your life around swells and tides and all that sort of stuff to then focus on raising a kid in a healthy, happy marriage. You know,
he's got them both.
It's hard to have the surf-centered life and have room in your life for those other things.
Well,
and it's just expensive to live at the beach is kind of what it comes down to. So if you're able to live at the beach, then of course you could squeeze in surfs between your family obligations, which is what you're doing.
That's what I do.
Yeah, but not a lot of people can pull that off.
Squeezing surfs, I'll say, when Matt first did that, when Matt made a Seattle move, I routinely mocked him just because I still had a big axe to grind with the Pacific Northwest. But now that that axe is ground and I've made peace with the Pacific Northwest and love it now, I go and visit Matt and think, this is totally epic, except I would very much miss my little squeezed surfs.
I know. Hard to imagine giving up.
I had John Brooks and Kevin Miller from the Florida Surf Film Festival were just down, and I had on, I think it was yesterday morning or 2 mornings ago or whatever, had like a bunch of silly stuff to do that, like I was supposed to go surfing with John and wanted the, you know, like a great 2 hours, sunny, warm morning. The waves weren't great, but who cares? A bunch of stuff jammed in and our surf literally became a 20 minute surf, but that 20 minutes was absolutely perfect. Right. Mm. It was like paddle out quick, bang out 4 waves. John surfs amazing, by the way.
He's so good.
Did you know how good he surfs?
Yeah.
Like ridiculous.
Yeah.
He had a wrap. Like, we were just at D Street, so a little punchy D Street. It was maybe, I don't know, to John, it was probably overhead. John's not a very tall man. But for an average guy, it was probably waist high. Say waist to mid rib cage. John took off on one and threw so much water down the line, like, disappeared, of course, way below the lip. But his wrap, like, just threw buckets of water.
What was he riding?
He was riding an asymmetrical that he shaped.
What?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
He hand-shaped himself an ASIM, which it looked really fun.
The dude's a stud.
He's a
fireman too.
He's a fireman. He's a film festival founder.
Yeah.
And he's a ripping surfer.
They're bummed that they left a bottle of 18-year-old something at your house.
Do you still
have it?
I do. Should I bring it to
Florida?
Yeah.
No.
I can't travel with it.
Just keep it.
Thanks, guys.
They're like, yeah, you were... You know, we drank. They thought they'd end up back at your house at some other point. And then they're sitting it with me the next night. And they're like, dude, we've got this bottle we left behind.
You should just ran over and got it.
No, I know. They didn't really care. But how was your time with them, first of all?
Oh, I mean, I love them. They're fantastic, man.
What'd you guys do?
It was all pretty mellow. I think we just, okay. We had a drink and then went out for dinner, walked down for dinner, and then had another drink.
Nice.
That was it.
Nice.
Simple.
We had a nice night out in Orange County.
Yeah, I wish that I could have spent more time.
Yeah.
Run up to LA.
So anyways, back to Matt Warshaw. What's interesting to me too is spending time with, I don't know, people that you interact with on the internet all the time, like in their actual environment, you know, like this is what it is. We're all the commenters on Beach Grit, all that stuff, we're all just sitting in our homes somewhere I don't know. It's not nearly as glamorous as I thought it is. I envisioned the surf community, like everybody lives at the beach and like lives a very surf centered, but it's just a dude sitting in their house weighing in on this thing that they're envisioning is there's a nucleus somewhere. There's no nucleus anymore. It's all spread out with just individual people trying to wrap their brain around.
That's true though. But I will say, I do believe that the surfer lives a better life in general. Like look at Matt's life there on Queen Anne Hill. Beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. Matt lives a gorgeous life. I feel that every Beach Grit commenter, that surfers in general are, even if they're not wealthy or, you know, wherever they are, they're living more interesting lives than their non-surfing counterpart. Like the surfing man or woman almost, I will say, by virtue of surfing, becomes somehow more interesting and lives a better life.
I think just having a passion in your life is what it is.
But a passion that, I'm going to get all weird about surfing. I don't mean to be weird about surfing, but I do feel that surfing is different.
I did too.
Essentially different than motocross riding or fishing or...
I did too.
Maybe it's the same as or similar to snowboarding, I'll say. But I think it's different than skateboarding. I think there's something, I can't say spiritual. I'm not going to say spiritual. It's not spiritual. But there's something essentially that makes you, that forces you to live a better life if you surf.
What is that something?
I don't know. I'll tell you what it's not. It's not spiritual.
I think it is spiritual, for lack of a better word. I'm gonna use it even if you don't, because like even you can't even lump snowboarding in, because snowboarding, yes, you're out in nature.
Sure.
But the elements aren't changing. You're not adapting to those elements so much.
But being on the hill, like in a good pow dump, I mean, there's something...
It's the closest analogy, but it's not the same.
I'll say there's something equally magical about what snowboarding... It's different.
But so surfing, you're enveloped in the ocean itself.
Sure.
That makes it unique.
Yeah.
And the ocean is moving, and there's all of these pulses. It's the closest thing would be being in the womb before you were born.
You should totally get a job at the WSL. This is a sound waves if I've ever
They're
heard one.
They're just going to rip us off anyway. They're just going to use our ideas.
I think there's something that makes you more adventurous when you surf.
Yeah,
like where you're willing to do stuff. You're willing to try stuff. You're willing to go more places.
Yeah.
By just simply by virtue of being a surfer, even though, and then coupled with being grouchy and grumpy and all those great traits that I thoroughly love.
Yeah. And so back to the passion thought though, I think like having this, I don't know, community that you feel connected to, like brethren that you do feel connected to, even if you're sitting in your upstairs room in Seattle, and having this raging passion for it that you feel like you actually want to argue with other people because of the way that they view it or the way that they post photos on Instagram about it. And all of those things, like that keeps us alive and going and keeps our muscles or our brain from atrophying, where I feel like other people who just kind of go to work on a day to day, and maybe they go to the gym even and they get exercise, there is a spiritual atrophy that's kicking in because they just don't. What is there to be passionate about in that world?
Sports.
You're just checking the boxes.
They're passionate about NBA basketball.
Watching other people exercise.
Exactly. I mean, the passive thing about watching like sports versus the active thing, even if you're not participating in surfing. And again, I'm not saying spiritual. It ain't spiritual, but it's something.
Yeah. Think of a better word.
I'm going to think of a better
word.
Until
then, I'm going to use spiritual. Yeah. Anyways, I had a blast with Warshaw. He got kind of drunk on our podcast, so he wants me to edit a lot of it.
Hell no, you better not.
I'm definitely not.
And
the drunken part was way better.
Obviously.
So clearly he's a rigorous editor and like conscientious about what he puts out in the world. And so he was very measured in all of his answers for the first hour. He made us Manhattans. We sat down.
Matt got boozed off one Manhattan? Yeah. Or how many Manhattans did you have?
He got boozed off one. So I killed mine pretty quickly because he was doing all that. I was, you know, he's doing all the talking. And so then at a certain point, he realized mine's empty. And I'm like, yeah, dude, slug yours. I need another one. Like, let's go make two more. So he drank it pretty quick. He made one more for me. And then he transitioned to white wine because he could see where it was going. So then we sat back down and he was much more loose in his conversation.
Lugubrious.
Perfect. And you could see then there was like a good 30 minutes where that was happening. And then I could see him
snap back
aware of it. And so starting to like put a muzzle on himself where he would like start to go down a road and then he would like second guess it and try to like back talk it.
Oh, you have to put
but
it
it's
up.
All good.
You have to put it up unedited.
Yeah, no, it's all good. And then in the end, he was just like, oh man, definitely that should only be an hour conversation. And I'm like, no, trust me. I know the way this works, and it's not to make him look bad at all. It's just that it's more authentic and real, and listeners identify that as well.
Well, you know? I mean, here, and the truth of the matter is, I mean, as a filmmaker,
you're going with that?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with that. I've never once, and I've said it on the show before, never once let a subject watch the film, because a subject is the absolute worst critic of, they don't like, it's just not good. What they think needs to get cut out, where they think they went weird or whatever, is not. Like, if Matt really did say something damning, you would either take it out or change it. If he sounded like an ass or a fool or you would fix that. Like, but you as the curator here, the filmmaker of podcast world, like, it's on you. You know what's good, right? Yeah. And Matt needs to trust that. The subject, I think, it makes me crazy. It makes me honest to goodness crazy when the subject gets a say in the film. If somebody, not that anybody's going to make a film about me, but if somebody was, I would hope they would say, you stay in the corner. Like, you come out when we ask you, and otherwise do your thing. But you do not get a look at the cut. You don't get a listen. You get nothing.
No, I agree. And you would only enter into that relationship if you trusted the artist.
Precisely.
And that's the thing. Matt does trust me. You know, like he understands completely. Drew Campion, on the other hand, I did edit a bit.
Because he was loopy?
I forgot. We were sober and lucid, but he just, a couple of conversations went off on a tangent and maybe I didn't do a good job cycling back and like wrapping the conversation up. So the open-endedness of it was specifically about women getting equal pay in professional surfing. And so his stance was like, they shouldn't get equal pay because they're not doing the same level of work. Like, you should get paid. And then it kind of went off, and what ended up being kind of conveyed is not where I think his heart was at.
Was he just a straight misogynist?
No.
I mean, is that how it sounded,
though? It came across as a straight misogynist, but the conversation kind of went off on a tangent and we never came back to let him complete his thought, basically. So I just kind of...
Precisely. Yeah. That's you as the director.
Yeah.
No, like doing right by your subject. Like, exactly. Because if that's not what you perceived he meant, then it would be rude of you to put it in there.
And I accepted the blame in that I should have closed the loop on that conversation. Like, I could have came back and let him complete his thought, but I forgot because we just went off on a tangent. Anyways, what do you want to know about Drew?
So here's the thing. Is it rude? Okay, so Drew Campion, for those who don't know, can you describe quickly who Drew is and his place in surfing and where he is now?
He's probably written more surf articles than anybody for every publication that you can imagine, but he linked up with John Severson in the early 60s. John Severson being the founder of Surfer Magazine. So Drew came in as editor, and at the time, Surfer was very like conservative and like tight haircuts, you know. And his bent was more drug-tinged and counterculture. And so he took the magazine in that direction. He talks on air about getting Severson high for the first time.
Yeah.
So we can kind of, I mean, you could make an argument that a lot of surfing Spicoli image and culture, perception of the culture, is due to Drew Campion. Epic. And his work with Surfer Magazine.
And now he lives
on Whidbey Island, which is an island in the Puget Sound off of Seattle.
How long has he lived there?
28 years.
Okay. And what brought him there in the first place?
Economics, I believe.
Okay. So I won't spoil that show. I mean, I'm very excited to hear that show. Somebody in, I think, the comments of your Instagram said it's like going to see Yoda. Was there a feeling of like making a pilgrimage or a trek to see this? Because is it rude? I thought Drew Campion was dead, long dead. Is that a rude thing to think?
I don't think it's rude. It's just misinformed.
Yeah.
There's nothing rude about it.
I thought he was dead in the ground, like rotting.
No, why? Like now, that bones. Sounds rude when you word it that way.
Yeah, no, because I haven't seen his name and he's... you know, in forever, and he's not part of today's surf conversation. So I just assumed he was dead.
No, he is not. He's alive and well. Is he really well, actually?
Does he partake in either surf or surf culture? Is he aware of what's going on out there?
I'm glad that you asked. Yes.
What does he? He doesn't like you. Great. Does he
Did
not?
Did you know this?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to tell you this anyways.
That's epic. It's probably because I think he's rotting in the ground, his corpse.
Maybe worms, he sensed it.
Worms in his eyeballs.
He watches the WSL and he reads the Surfer's Journal. And then I was like, well, what about surf websites? And I could feel him kind of dodging the question. And in hindsight, it was because he knows that you and I work together. Mm. And so he didn't want to fully say what he felt about you. But I pressed him on it. I was like, finally, he goes, you're friends with Chaz, right? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, fuck that guy.
Awesome.
Or something like that. That like something like, I hate that guy.
What's his beef?
He feels like you are degrading the culture by... I mean, honestly, I'd have to let you listen to it. I don't remember the exact words he used.
I'm excited.
But it was something to do with like your, denigrating the culture that he loves.
What a fucking hypocritical pussy. He's the guy who brought drugs in.
Which isn't denigrate. Do you feel like that's denigrated the culture?
It would to the people who wanted it straight laced and tight haircut, bringing drugs and psychedelia in. For sure, it denigrated the culture.
I feel like it's added richness to the culture.
That's exactly
and like
what I...
more, no, what I think he did was properly or accurately reflect what was happening in surf culture.
What does he think I'm doing? That's the same exact thing, old fucking man. Drew Campion, I'm coming for you.
Okay. So maybe he doesn't fully recognize what's happening on the ground.
I'm going to say Drew Campion is an old man hypocrite who has lost his way. That's what happens to all old men, though. They perceive that what they did was somehow unique and better. And that what the people came who come after them, like, you know, any musician, like Frank Sinatra, I think hated rock and roll, right?
Yeah.
And thinks it's worthless. And then now there's so many old rockers who hate hip hop. It's the way
but
it goes.
But those rockers never then poked Frank Sinatra in the eye and called him a hypocrite. They recognized where their legacy came from.
For sure. I mean, I'll totally recognize where my legacy comes from Drew Campion. But I'll also say that it's an old man thing to think that, he can, of course, I'm partially kidding. He can hate me all he wants and deservedly so, right? But also, I don't feel that what Beach Grit does or what I do is denigrate surf culture. I think if I can be really arrogant, we're rescuing surf culture. We're rescuing it from the totally stagnant, purely advertorial driven, WSL tinged horrible positive wall of positive sound.
I keep
getting my own trademark wrong that it's becoming, right?
Yeah.
Like, so yeah.
So maybe
that's what I think.
Okay. So I'm going to argue for Drew, even though I don't know that he feels this way. What if he does view Beach Grit that way as like a force for good for the reasons you just said, but he views you and your writing as, you know,
great,
misguided or just bad.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's what he did say. He did say Chess. He didn't say Beach Grit.
Sure,
never referenced Derek.
And good. And totally.
All right.
Good.
Good.
That makes me happy, to be honest.
That you're even on his radar or that?
Yes. And that what makes me happy about it? For sure that I'm on his radar, but also that what I do aggravates him.
Hmm.
Like it feels good to aggravate the old dead rotting in their coffin guard, just in the same way. I hope that I have enough forethought. And again, it's real arrogant to even say that my stuff is valuable, right? Like I'm coming at this from a position that my stuff is valuable, but I hope that when I'm old, there's something like happening in surfing that I look at and say that stink, that, you know, those kids. But then I catch myself and think
it already is.
What
the whole Eric Logan movement is already doing that to you. Everything in surfing is totally upsetting your sensibility.
That's totally true. Is Eric Logan,
you're already the old man.
Is this
how have you not noticed this?
Oh, but Eric, because Eric Logan's not is it?
Yes.
Is Eric Logan the future of surfing that I'm saying, back in my day?
100%. Eric Logan,
wow,
for some reason, represents child exuberance. You know, childlike, wow, innocent exuberance.
You're totally right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, then fuck you, Drew Campion, and fuck you, Eric Logan.
So you're getting attacked from beneath and above. Everybody's on the attack. And the side, to be honest with you.
That's totally great. I'm going to have to go sit on the beach and meditate upon this revelation. today.
That's so cliche.
Yeah.
So what were your thoughts on Drew before I told you he hated you?
Nothing much. I just knew that I think I had heard from Derek or Matt that he was the guy that like that Surfer Magazine had gone on this or was this real straight lace thing.
Yeah.
And that he came in and really turned it. And so I'd always really thought, wow, well, good on him. That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. But then I was unaware of him kind of beyond that, you know, like I didn't follow. I don't think I've ever read him. Like
you avoid him? I feel like if you read Surfing at any point, I don't know, from the 60s
I'm sure I did.
Till the 90s.
I'm sure I did, but his like writing style or whatever never made an impression. Gotcha. Like I didn't think of him as a writer, or I wouldn't be able to attach a style to Drew Campion. Like I knew, you know, as an icon that he had turned this thing this way.
Right.
But in terms of his body of work, I was unaware of what it was.
I'm a big fan of his, and just somebody who has a real, I don't know, way with words.
Yeah.
You know, like he speaks in poetry almost, you know, like a lot of things I'd ask him a question and he would go off on a tangent, but I wouldn't even try to wrangle him because it's like, oh, just keep talking.
Like, do you like his writing style?
Yeah, I do.
I'm going to post a piece when this podcast goes up, because I would like to recognizably read something
he's done. Yeah, I will. And he's written a bunch of books too. Actually, they're probably in this room that we're sitting
in. I better get them.
But he's written like a book on Greg Knoll, a book on Jack O'Neill. Like he had a good relationship with Jack O'Neill.
Okay.
A really tight relationship with Severson forever.
Okay. Is Severson's dead though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to listen to that podcast.
Yeah, lots of interesting stories about like Severson living across the street from Richard Nixon.
Oh, yeah.
Cotton's where Nixon moved in. And Severson thought, like actually Severson's phones were tapped.
Yeah.
And so because of their drug usage, the CIA or FBI or whoever called them, like actually called them. I think they were going into the gated community and they came over the loudspeaker on the gate and they were just like, hey, if you guys ever do illegal drugs again in this property, you'll be put away for so long, people will forget who you are.
Wow. I mean,
full on threatened.
Good on Campion. That makes me really like it.
But they were sneaking photos of Nixon. Like they got the telephoto lens from Surfer, like shooting into Nixon's house.
There's that one famous photo of didn't one of them take that where the military police guy has the surfboard that he took from somebody and
walking up the beach? I think that's Ron Stoner.
Oh, is that Ron Stoner?
Okay. Shot it, but they did shoot photos of Nixon on the beach as well, like going for a morning walk.
So epic. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, back to the Florida Surf Film Festival guys that were out here. We're going, they're doing their screening, their kind of main screening in November, the beginning of November. You and I are supposed to go.
Yep.
Are you going?
Yeah.
Because Ashton Goggins is going to be there.
Excited.
What's going to happen,
dude? I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I really like John and Kevin so much and appreciate the Florida Surf Film Festival so much that I can't cause problems for them. So I'll probably really try to be on my best behavior, but I don't know how that looks.
Why not reach out to Ashton in advance and be like, hey, we're both going to be at this venue together. What's the protocol?
No, because I'm not going to decide something with Ashton. I'll do whatever I want, and Ashton will have to play in my world like he always does.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Then I mean, I'll decide what I'm going to do, and Ashton can see what I'm going to do.
Okay, perfect.
But it'll be silly to make a scene. So,
the thing is, the silliness will instigate unexpected consequence from him. Like, and then it could go sideways, and therefore you are responsible.
Precisely. Yeah. So that, I mean, my number one duty will be to my friends Kevin and John to not wreck their thing.
Well. Do you think Kevin and John want something to happen?
I don't think so. I think both of them, maybe John might. I think Kevin is pretty, is
risk averse. Yeah.
And I don't think that he would be too happy if the Florida Festival got like a reputation as like a, you know, a either violent place or a silly place.
Okay. Fair enough.
So yeah, I'll see what I'm going to do, but I'm going to try to be on my best behavior.
I think it's almost past its, like it's passe at this point.
I mean,
it
wouldn't be funny.
It's past the point of funny.
Sure.
You know,
it's done. Yeah. It's run its thing. It's run its course, but I'm also don't feel like, oh, okay, I'm going to go up and like bro down with Ashton.
No.
Like I feel no need to bro down with that dude.
Yeah. All right. Well, Florida Surf Film Festival, for anybody who wants to go, I forget the dates. It's early November.
I think it's 7th through 10th.
Sounds about right.
Or that's when we're there.
Yeah. But sounds about right. So anybody who wants to come to that who's anywhere near New Smyrna Beach should come.
It's an insane. Absolutely fantastic show.
Yeah. I think Taylor Steele's going to be there. Jack Coleman's premiering a film. He'll be there. So a bunch of people, actually. The other thing I need to follow up with you on, Chaz, because this episode is sponsored by Manscaped,
very
the
exciting.
Number one men's below the belt grooming, offering precision engineered tools for your family jewels. I gave you a box of Manscaped equipment a month ago.
Yep.
What's the results? Have you Manscaped?
So I pulled it out.
Pulled
the whole
what,
box out.
What out? The Lawnmower 2.0.
I pulled the Lawnmower 2.0 out, and I was standing there in the mirror, holding it in my hand, the Lawnmower 2.0. And I was thinking, I've never done this before, right? I have never manscaped in my it's been a lifetime.
Which is shocking.
Lifetime of not manscaping, okay. Right? So I'm standing there, holding the Lawnmower 2.0, looking at myself in the mirror, looking at the Lawnmower 2.0, and then I noticed my mustache was unruly, and I thought, you know, I'm going to try it here first. I'll tell you, that thing is the best buzzers I've ever had in my entire life.
It is.
You can do things with that on your face that I've never... So I know it's not for that. I know this thing is not for that, but it can get wet.
Yeah, it's right? Waterproof.
It's waterproof, and the precision buzz, I was thinking, man, everybody wasting this on their penises. They should just do a little bit of face work first. Right? I know you're not supposed
to
do that.
You got to start with the face and then work down because you can't go from balls back to face.
Precisely. Okay. So that's why next show, I'm going to go below the belt.
So
I think.
You have to, first of all. Like, I'm telling you, you've been missing out if you haven't.
Really?
Yeah. And I've been on the program for years, but I didn't have the right tools, basically, until now. I didn't know that this even existed until now. So I've just bought like wall trimmers off of Amazon or whatever. And then, but they're like, they're just not built for the job.
What percentage of men do you think manscape below the belt?
5%. Well, are we going worldwide stats?
No, because in the Middle East and stuff, they all do. But
they all do?
Yeah.
I was going to say they all don't.
No. Middle East, you're shorn.
Really?
Mm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But then there's
many places in the world.
I mean, there's a lot of just undeveloped parts of the world that they're worried about food and water.
Sure.
You know? So yeah. I don't think they're too concerned about manscaping.
Okay, so let's say Western men. Okay. Or let's say American men.
Then 5%.
You think 5% of American men trim?
Yeah. Do you think that's high or low?
I to be honest, I have absolutely no idea.
I think 5's fair.
There's got to be the stats out there, right?
Well, what percentage of men are enlightened and geniuses? That's really what we're aiming for.
Is that really what it is?
It's better, dude. Everything about it. I've been honestly extolling the virtues quietly for, I don't know, years now, 5-10 years.
Yeah.
It makes everything better.
I
don't know why. Even parts of your skin that don't touch your partner's skin, but they're manscaped, just feel better.
Like daily life. You're walking down the street, just feeling better.
That too. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's fantastic. So anyways, you're only hurting yourself by not indulging. But the Lawnmower 2.0, obviously high speed trimmer with skin safe technology. So it doesn't nick. That's the key.
Doesn't nick, but also waterproof.
So you can do it in the shower.
I mean, okay. Well,
save time and clean up by doing it in the shower.
Okay. I've got to gear up for this.
Well, Halloween is coming up, Chaz.
Ooh.
You don't want to be looking like be mistaken for Chewbacca in the bedroom with all your gross body hair.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. Listeners, by the way, if they want to benefit from all of the virtues of manscaping, they get 20% off by using our promo code, which is the word surfing. 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. The perfect package 2.0, which is the box that I gave you, has the lawnmower, crop preserver, which is basically deodorant. For the most wretched part of your body that needs it the most. The crop reviver, all sorts of good stuff. The perfect package 2.0. Manscaped.com. Promo code surfing.
Okay, I'm going. I'll talk about it next week again.
Your package will thank you.
Okay.
There you go.
Is that a new... Did you just make a new tagline?
No. I did not. I wish that I could claim that one. But what's his name? Glenn here at Surfing Heritage and Culture Center came in before we started recording. He's like, dude, please don't talk about your balls. I do not want to think about your guys, you know. And I'm like, no, you should be thinking about yours, not ours. And listeners have supported it, and I've gotten nothing but good feedback about the product, so I'm fine.
And also, if we can pivot this show, even if I've asked you before, if we could have like a love and advice section on the show, it'd be nice.
Dude, it's missing sorely, because that's primarily what our conversations revolve around when the mics aren't on.
Completely.
And the same thing with the Florida guys that were out here, same thing with Matt Warshaw.
It's all what surfers talk about when they're not talking about surfing.
Yeah.
Is
he wants love. To, first of all, he wants to know what's going on in my life. And then I'm leaning on him for like marriage. Like, dude, what does it look like in the long term? How do I make these decisions now to ensure those things in the long term? It was 90% of our conversations.
I think that's when this show is going to go through the roof, when we tie in a love line angle.
You're responsible for it then.
Okay.
That's on you.
Okay. I'm going to bring it next week.
Okay. Design a segment.
I'm going to design a segment where we talk about love and life.
And I'll be an open book.
Perfect.
All right.
Okay. Done. Wow.
What I want to know about you is you were just kind of at the beginning of the show, it came up organically talking about surfers kind of just being a better people or living a better life.
Yeah. Worse people, better lives.
So Jamie Marshall, you wrote about, is the only person in the world to be studying for a PhD in surf therapy.
World's first and only. A lot like Matt Warshaw, there's only one surf historian and there's only one PhD candidate in surf therapy.
What does that even mean? How do you even design it?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I don't know why it needs its own PhD. You'd think you'd be like a therapy PhD with a surf emphasis or something. Right. I don't know how you get. I don't know what's specific about surf therapy.
So
unless he's scientifically studying
right. The
benefits of surfing, like in a real scientific way, like what it does to the brain and what it does to the body or what all that kind of stuff, it does to depression.
Yeah.
Makes it worse. That's the best part were the comments. I can't remember. Somebody had a real banger comment. Oh, I think it was Nick Carroll.
I've got it in my notes.
Yeah.
Which is what I actually wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Is surfing therapy or is it treachery? Because let's really weigh out how things fall out in your life.
Okay. So I think in the new mode that I'm now going to have to think about as the next wave, the ELO, Eric Logan, Everything is Awesome, Wall of Positive Noise, that kind of surfing, I guess, makes you happy, right? That shitbag kind.
I feel like it's a thin veneer.
It's a thin veneer. And I would imagine in, what are we going to call that kind of surfing? Positive surfing? Well, it needs a name.
Yeah, you're right. It does. Shoot.
Well, we'll call it positive surfing for now. Okay. And then we'll come up with a better one.
Iglo
surfing.
You got the glow.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, that guy has the glow.
I would imagine there's a lot of, hey, bro, how you doing in the parking lot? And then a lot of suicides later. I bet a lot of those people are committing suicide.
Yeah. There's going to be a rock bottom. For every shaka you throw, it indicates 5 days of depression in your future.
Totally. And I think depression that you can't deal with because there's no way to deal with it, right? Because you're too busy smiling and throwing shakas and everything is awesome. And then boom, hang yourself.
Yeah.
You're dead.
Yeah. This is getting dark.
Yeah, but it's true. I feel when, like, and there was, I put it on Beach Crit, that the wall of positive noise is actually killing us.
Yeah, exactly. So that is what it is.
Yeah.
I completely agree. So the surfing, I guess all things in moderation, just to jump to the end of my thought, but, right? I'll just cut to it. But when I read that surfing is therapy thing, everybody wants to talk about all these glowing things. But really, let's look at the people who are spending the most time surfing. And it's a list of freaking misanthropes.
Derelicts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Complete derelicts who abandon their family and all of their obligations. And they're addicts is what it is.
Yes.
It's just a different version of addiction. And so it's not actually, if you ran the numbers, I bet the stats would argue that if this guy actually does his due diligence in his PhD, he's going to find that you should not be surfing.
But here's what I'll say. If he gets out of like the, you know, all positive, everything is awesome zone and actually gets to real surfers, like real core surfers who have been doing it forever in Australia, in France, in Brazil, in America, I think he'll find that the truth is what it is. Honestly, surfers are worse people who live better lives.
Oh, okay.
So I bet that these derelicts, these misanthropes, us, right?
Yeah.
We go almost and blow off steam in the water a little bit, or somehow it changes our brains to think about something bigger than ourselves, something in some way, some adventurous life, even if it's adventure small A adventure, not big A adventure, it still does something to us that I think is totally positive. I think if you're going to say, no, surfing is happy, makes you happy, all you're doing is burying the bad stuff. We can kind of cope with the bad stuff by surfing, I think.
So I think, as with probably most drugs, it has positive effect kind of when you're doing the exploration phase of the surfing. But once the addiction kicks in and you round the bend, you're then missing work because of it and family obligations.
I'll still say worst person, better life. I'll still say your life as a surfer is better than it would have been as a non-surfer. Like for me, I mean, again, you know, I grew up Oregon coast, cold, you know, miserable. Surfing was an escape. Like drugs are escape, right? Surfing is still an escape. Surfing is this thing that we crave and that we do. And I don't know how my life would be without surfing. I don't think it'd be a bad life, but I know for a fact, or I think my life is very much better with surfing, even with all the bad, weird stuff that goes along with that.
Okay. Nick Carroll's quote, speaking solely for myself, surfing posed as therapy at first, but soon taught me how to punch people, take too many drugs, injure myself quite badly, and degrade various women who deserved far better. It actually required therapy for me to survive the effects of surfing.
And I'll say this, though. Just think how much more boring... I mean, it's an epic, epic quote. But think how much more boring Nick Carroll would be without surfing. What would Nick Carroll be without surfing, right? All those things he said, wrote about, are, yes, they're bad. You know, degrading women, awful. Especially, I mean, minus that one, but the rest of them, too many drugs, punching people, all this kind of stuff. That's a way better. That's the life I want to live over I was kind to everybody. I really helped old ladies cross the street a lot. And, you know, I never got a sunburn. My skin is baby soft.
Nick Carroll would be like Mr. Peanut had he not found surfing. He'd be like sophisticated, wearing a monocle, studying up on... like some sort of quantum physics.
But who would you rather hang out with, Mr. Peanut or Nick Carroll?
Nick Carroll for sure.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't even like peanuts.
Worst people, better lives.
Yeah. The photo that you used for that article was from The Beach Bum.
Yeah.
The movie.
Have you seen it?
I love it.
It's, how epic is it?
It's so epic. I'm so glad that you've seen it.
I need to watch it again because I was kind of in and out while watching it. I think I was writing a story or something, but I need to sit down and really focus. Harmony Korine visually is amazing. And Matthew McConaughey in that role is like, obviously the role built around the persona that we, I think, feel or want Matthew McConaughey to be.
Yeah.
I went to a party once and Matthew McConaughey was there.
No way.
And it was like a super small party too. It was outside, nice, and a band was playing, and Matthew McConaughey started dancing. And he, in some ways, I mean, that character, his Beach Bum character, is so him. Like, he's just dancing around. He was wearing some like zip-off pant shorts, Tevas. I think he even had a fanny pack on.
In real life?
In real life. Yeah, just dancing.
Was he like prepping for this role? Because that's how he dressed in this.
Yeah, no, I think that role is a lot Matthew McConaughey. I mean, he was totally nice guy. Wasn't like off the rails at all, but just, kind of head back dancing.
So I feel an obligation to tell listeners what the movie's about. Yes. And I feel like listeners who do watch it, 80% of them will hate the film.
Sure.
And I mean, 20% of them will love it.
I think Harmony Korine, the director, is very polarizing. Totally. Anyway, he also directed Spring Breakers, if anybody's seen
which that. I liked a lot, but not nearly as much as The Beach Bum.
Yeah.
Anyways, Matthew McConaughey plays a guy, Moondog, living in Key West, who and he's clearly like the toast of the town and is wealthy, you know, just kind of stroll. Everybody, he walks up onto state. He's a poet. And so you presume from watching it that he's a wealthy, famous poet. And he walks up on stage at any bar that he goes into and he'll recite a little poetry and everybody loves him. He interrupts Jimmy Buffett at a concert to read a line or two of poetry. And he gets a phone call from his wife who lives up in Miami, who's played by Isla Fisher. Mm-hmm. And she's on this like palatial mansion's deck overlooking the water. So you're like, okay, he's clearly a wealthy, famous poet. She's up there. They're disconnected in their marriage or whatever. And on the phone call, Snoop Dogg walks up behind her and like starts rubbing her. You could tell she's having an affair with Snoop Dogg. But then Snoop says what's up to Moondog and is like, hey, Moondog, I'm here taking care of your wife for you. So now you're like, oh, they're in an open relationship. You figure out pretty shortly thereafter that Moondog isn't wealthy. It's her family's money. And Moondog is just living off the proceeds down in Key West, getting drunk. And he is a poet, but he's not a particularly great poet. I think he had like one book back in the day that he's still kind of writing on. So then enters Jonah Hill, which is his agent, his book agent, who's so good. He's unrecognizable almost.
I don't think I knew it was Jonah for like a hot minute.
Yeah. His voice is an identifier, but he doesn't look like Jonah. But he plays this like Southern gentleman wearing a straw hat, always has a mint julep in the hand and a cigar in the other. And he's like, Moondog, you got to get back to writing, man. You just partying way too hard. We need to let the energy flow. So he ends up finding his creative energy through Snoop Dogg's weed that is specially sourced from Jamaica. And that's later. But he has to, the kind of conflict in the plot comes when Moondog goes back home to his daughter's wedding in Miami. So he has to give up his party life in Key West for a minute to go back home. But he's a disappointment to his daughter, shows up late, bangs the waitress, crashes the car. Like, it's comedy ensues. It's dark, but it's so good.
It's a really, really,
it's so good.
Visually, it's stunning too.
Totally.
Yeah.
After that, I went back and watched the movie that Harmony Korine did, Mr. Happy.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's so good, dude.
Who's in it?
I forget the kid's name. He's recognizable if you saw him. He's a Spanish, or actually he's from Mexico.
Okay.
And then Samantha Morton is the female.
Okay.
But he is a Michael Jackson impersonator living in Paris who goes to live on a commune with other impersonators, other celebrity impersonators.
Wow.
It's so bizarre.
Wow. But I'm excited about this.
You realize, like, these impersonators, he's a Michael Jackson impersonator working as a street performer. You see those street performers in Santa Monica or whatever, and you're like, they are amazing. He's clearly dedicated to this craft. Well, if you're going to be that good at dancing like Michael Jackson, you actually have to do it 6 to 8 hours a day. So he's working for pennies, barely can make ends meet, living in this terrible apartment, and then goes back to the apartment, turns on the music, and starts dancing again.
Yeah.
You know, like, it is a lonely, sad life. And the poignant part of that film is, like, it was really a psychological assessment of Michael Jackson himself. Like, this impersonator wants to be loved for being this character, but Michael Jackson only ever wanted to be loved for being this character, but nobody really knew the real him, you know? So there's that going on. It's great.
I'm excited to see that one.
Really good. Yeah.
Speaking of lonely misanthropes, have you seen Joker yet?
No.
Ooh, are you going to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm super into it. I just haven't had the time.
Yeah, go see it.
So surfing is therapy or treachery? What are you going with?
Oh, treachery.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Now that we've taken all of the math or done the
math.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No, I'm not going treachery. I'm going for the Eric Logans, for the Eagles, for the positive warriors, then it's treachery. I'm going to say for your average dude, it's not therapy. I'm just going to say it gives you a better life. See the difference.
So is it worth it?
For sure.
Okay.
1000%. The difference, I think, the important distinction is things that make you happy are not always interesting, right?
Yeah.
So I think for the people who are just getting off on the positive, good vibes, throwing chakas, all that, their flat line of just one note is so boring, even if they're happy all the time. I do not want to be Eric Logan, you know? I mean, or the Eric Logan archetype, like thousands of pictures of me smiling ear to ear, being the guy who's, you know, known as the stoked guy. You know, I mean, there's the quote stoked guy everywhere, right? The guy who's always stoked.
He's the worst.
I never want to be the stoked guy. Not that I want to be the grumpy guy, but man, when old Dirk Ziff threw out the grumpy local thing as a negative, I mean, I've hammered on it obviously now for how long ago did he say that? For years.
Year ago.
Oh, it's my, it's the one thing I'll be known for at the end is just beating something to the ground. But with that, I think he crystallized what is the best part about surfing, and the fact that he sees that as the negative, to me, that was the whole argument right there for why the WSL is why I'm so happy to kick it in the balls each and every day.
Yeah. Well, the real kind of conundrum in it is you develop all this character from doing this thing that is selfish, but then you either get married or have family and you have like actual real responsibilities in your life, you still need a little dosing of that occasionally just to kind of reset your sanity.
Well, and to be you, right? I mean, I think there's something a parallel to, okay, so you're what's your longest relationship?
I was married for 5 years.
Okay, and then before and that
we were together for 5 years. So 10.
After that
two.
Okay. So long enough, right? Where I think and this hypothesis has not fully worked, so bear with me.
Okay.
But okay, you're
I'm so intrigued.
You're single guy, right? You dress like you dress, your hair is like your hair is, you do what you do, you're you, right? You go, you meet a girl, I think she falls in love with the you. That, you right. know, is dangerous, kind right. of. Not, I mean, because dangerous for lack of a better word. But, you know, every young male, I think, out on the prowl, there's an element of danger. Now, so she falls in love with the dangerous element. You're in a relationship for enough time. Pretty soon, the things that, you know, you're going to get dulled down slightly. Like, the danger is no longer as attractive, or she doesn't think it's as attractive to
yeah.
her, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, maybe cut your hair, or maybe, you know, if she buys you an untucked shirt or something like that, right? Like something.
You start manscaping.
Precisely. No, but because manscaping, I think, could be dangerous.
And by the way, yeah, the manscaping you do when you're dating.
Precisely. Yeah. And okay, that's, I mean, that's a dangerous part. That's not like gotcha. That's not a give up, you know? So she, I think, and again, this is all kinds of stereotypes here, but she'll try to round those or smooth those rough edges, right?
Yes.
She fell in love with the rough edges, but now that she has the rough edges captured, those rough edges now are, I think, attracting other people too, possibly. I mean, I think this is the almost evolutionary imperative. So she tries to dull you down and make you dull, right?
Correct.
Not that women are trying to make men dull, and this could equally be for a man who fell in love with a dangerous woman, and then, hey, baby, you know, could you maybe not do this as much or whatever, right? So this is equal sides, man, woman, woman, man. They both round each other's corners. And I think surfing can be or should be an antidote against that, right? Because the woman really doesn't want, and the man doesn't want, a dull partner.
No.
That's what they think they want.
Their biology, kind of, it's an imperative.
Precisely.
That they start making you do that. But as soon as you become that dull person,
affair time.
She starts looking elsewhere.
That's when the affair yeah. hits, right there. So you always need to keep dangerous, whether you're a man or a woman. You need to keep an element of danger, of unpredictability, of, you know, real, not bad behavior, but of excitement of, you know, what's he going to do next? What's she going to do next? I think dynamic in order to stay interesting. And I think surfing lends itself very well to that.
This dissertation is worthy of a Surfer's Journal written piece. And I feel like if Drew Campion listened to this or read that piece,
would Drew like
come around?
I can't wait to go.
Because it's profound. He nailed it.
I'm excited to go have a drink with Drew. Do you think Drew would have me?
Yeah, of course.
If I sojourned up there?
Yeah.
And we
got to do the trek. You got to take a ferry.
Does Drew drink?
Yeah.
So I could drink. What does Drew drink?
We took a swig from his Bob Dylan whiskey.
So
Bob Dylan has a whiskey.
He's a whiskey man.
I guess.
So if I bring some whiskey up to Drew,
would you
follow along?
Yeah.
I'll record
the debate.
Okay, perfect. This is a
table jump.
Drew?
Strangely, when I saw him, he was wearing a yellow beanie.
Oh,
I'm just so kidding. Excited.
Yeah, this is going to be exciting. I mean, if Drew will have me.
He will, for sure. I think he totally would. He's okay. Game for whatever.
Okay,
he's
great.
Super cool.
Great.
I've never shared this theory with you, but I do have a theory that dovetails perfectly with what you're talking about. Is that men and women only have like a 3 to 5 year where we're kind of on the same, worldview, and like our energies align and you can really like connect with them. Other than that, you're screwed. So what happens is when men and women are 18 or 20 years old or so, men are crazy and they want to fight. Like all crime, all violent crime is attributed to men who are between 16 and 25, basically,
yep.
You know? So like, that's what we're doing. We want to go out and party and we just want to get drunk, go to the bar, get in fights, all that. And the woman who's 20 years old is like, why don't we just stay in tonight? Like, let's stay home. Let's get on the sofa, watch a movie and snuggle up. And we're like, no, hell no. Then later in life, men have beer bellies, they're balding, they want to stay home on a Saturday and watch a football game. That's when the girls are looking at each other going,
let's party.
Chardonnay, let's yeah. go out, girls. It's girls weekend in Temecula. Like, let's party it up at age 45, you know? So these two, I'm showing Chaz a graph right now, a chart with an axis, And the men start here and the women start here. And eventually you're going to cross paths in the middle.
It cross paths in like 30, 33.
28 to 34-ish, yeah. Depending on your maturity level, you know? And that's where you're both like, hey.
So you fall in love and get married.
Let's do a little bit of drugs.
Yeah.
Let's drink a bit and we'll go out, but we're going to come home together.
Yeah.
And we're going to like in the morning regret our decisions last night and have a laugh about it and then go to work on Monday.
Yep.
That's what you're doing at that age. But then it crosses over to where the dudes are like, you know what? I think I'd rather spend more time. I don't have the money or the time or the energy to continue partying like this. My body is showing its effects and I kind of want to go surfing. And if I've drank too much, I can't surf. And the woman's going, what do you want to sit around on the couch for? My girlfriend just got divorced. She's single and she's out partying and having the time of her life. I want to do that.
1000%. Yeah. I totally agree. But again, I think you can bring, I'm showing David a graph now, the same graph. I think you can bring, especially up here, you as a man, don't be a fat sad sack sitting on the couch, right?
Right.
And
that's
so
you got to adjust.
Precisely. And so when your wife brings home or girlfriend brings home an Untuckit shirt. I hope Untuckit never sponsors the show. Untuckit. I get this stupid Untuckit shirts drive me fucking crazy.
I don't even understand the concept. I don't tuck in any of my shirts.
Nobody like, does. What? I mean, if you do or don't, who fucking cares? Why? But there's honest to goodness mall stores now. It's not only in my awareness of it, as an airline magazine thing. Like that's where I first saw it, right?
Okay.
Untuckit in the airline magazine. I was like, oh man, all these business dudes are flying and maybe they're bumped, their shirts tucked in on the airplanes. But now there's honest to goodness mall stores. Like I think it's a raging success.
That's Untuckit. Crazy. So they're just t-shirts that aren't as long as
button-up shirts that aren't as long as a regular, it doesn't have like the tail of a regular button-up shirt, right?
Okay.
Who fucking gives two shits? But if
that's so funny.
Any man's wife or girlfriend brings him an Untuckit shirt, honey, I hope that he marches it outside, throws kerosene on it, and lights it on fire.
You gotta throw it in her face. I mean, she needs to understand she made a mistake.
Precisely. And I think this is the hard part is for men particularly, and probably for women too, when your partner says, could you maybe, you know, get a haircut or could you, I don't really like that, those torn jeans, you know, or whatever the stereotypes are. She may be right. Those torn jeans may be shitty and may be a throwback to, you know, and you maybe shouldn't be wearing them, but you can't change those out for khaki pants. You have to really mentally gear up to find how can I keep some edge, you know, at whatever age you're at 40, 50, 60.
Yeah. You got to double down.
You fully have to double down.
Yeah.
You have to, because again, and it's same for this stinking. I've seen it all the time too. Men like with awesome girls who are out raging or fun or funny or, you know, kind of off the walls and just beat them down. Like the real where, you know, initially the girl tells an off color joke and the guy's there laughing. And then 10 years later, she tells an off color joke and you could just see the embarrassment. He's like, no.
Yeah.
Where a girl double down, tell a dirtier joke.
Yeah. So I want to be able to give listeners advice. Like what is the cure all that'll allow you to keep your edge? And it is surfing.
It's surfing.
That's what it is.
Precisely.
Going out, getting in the cold, suffering a little bit.
Precisely.
Getting humbled by Mother Nature.
Blowing up stuff out, like not, because I think even, you know, being responsible is great, but wife comes home and the cupboard's not on or husband comes home and the, you know, laundry's not done. Like it's important to say, to blow it off. That I have something in my life that actually matters.
Yeah. So
surfing.
This is why the wave pool doesn't have any part in our culture.
Precisely.
Like this, the wave pool is the antithesis of all of that. It zaps out all of the hard work and suffering that you have to do for the thing and just serves it up on a platter for you.
Moreover,
and what's worse is for a dollar amount.
Moreover, precisely. It makes surfing a all-inclusive family vacation.
It's a commodity at that point.
And like the families who go on I've been on the all-inclusive vacation before. It's pretty funny or fun. But the family who regularly goes, hey, you know, we're going to the Bahamas, to Atlantis or whatever. Parents do, you know, drink and eat and kids do whatever. It's all inclusive. Boring. Like, where's the spontaneity or where's the, you know,
adventure?
Man, precisely. We may miss our flight or we may miss this cab or, you know, we're stuck eating at a place, you know, whatever, even minor adventure.
Right.
Like
having to make a decision.
Precisely. Travel that travel gives you.
But when that, so yeah, that life is designed for the person who's zapped all of their spirit throughout the year by working for the man and overworking and not being able to cover all their expenses and stressing out. So now we're just going to go on this thing where we don't have to think at all.
It's positive vibe warriors. Is that the Gudauskas' thing?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Which is actually a good thing.
I love the Gudauskas and what they're doing, and yeah. I don't mean to throw them in this bus, but it's the person who wants to go away. And
you have the ego.
Yeah, the ego.
And you want to just go not make any decisions.
Precisely, and just go rot in good feelings.
But that's why they then just sit there and saturate themselves in booze. It's like the all-inclusive thing, which I'm not against either. But the all-inclusive thing, it's like unlimited drinking. So you sit by the pool and just drown yourself. Just get wasted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you go hang yourself.
Yeah. That's coming.
Zombie for that guy.
This all leads us to Kelly Slater's Sound Waves.
Wow.
It was written in the stars that all of these conversations would tee up perfectly.
That's why we do the hard yards.
Psychological profile that we're going to do on Kelly Slater right now.
That's why we do the hard yards, planning and prepping for these shows.
Really, we do. And I want to start by saying I am thrilled that we have a figure as interesting as Kelly Slater to assess. And so anything that I say negative from this point on, filter through that lens in that I'm grateful for him.
We've honest to goodness talked about Kelly Slater for 20 years. And by the looks of it, we are going to talk about him for 20 more without ever running out of material.
Correct. And I'm grateful for him because he's interesting. Like how we'd have nothing to talk about if John Florence or Connor Coffin Ace Buchan.
Even look at Kelly's own contemporaries, Shane Dorian, right? I love Shane Dorian as a character, but Shane Dorian is not interesting. No. Like I don't think about Shane Dorian every day. I honest to goodness, I'll say, how amazing is that? I probably literally, and of course I'm a surf journalist, but I think about Kelly Slater every day of my life.
Yep.
Kelly Slater's, like when I just mentioned Shane Dorian, that's the first time I've thought about Shane Dorian. I'll say in months. Yeah, me
too. That's interesting. So I think Shane isn't even Shane actually does things other than surfing. So he actually...
Nothing against Shane.
No, I know. But I'm saying the vast majority of examples that we could pick don't do anything other than surf. Well, they're solely focused on surf.
Kelly's psychotic. Like Kelly, the way Kelly is crazy.
I'm
going
to read two quotes. So I was traveling and therefore not fully focused on the surf world. And WSL dropped one of their Sound Waves episodes where they follow a particular competitor around the contest site. And it's a 10 minute to 20 minute little documentary piece.
Why is it 20 minutes?
I don't know.
That's way too long.
Yeah.
Even Kelly.
Well, I got one direct message from a guy saying, is that Kelly Slater Sound Waves the best content the WSL has put out this year?
By far.
Meaning he loved it. I don't know why he loved it. I didn't chime back in because I was busy. But the following email I got said, what did I just watch? Probably the lamest thing ever. Kelly riding grandma's bike, having his ego rubbed by his close friend and cheerleader, talking surf with clueless celebrities, playing golf, yawn, and introducing the raconteurs to a very tepid crowd. No wonder his contest performances are tumbling. The guy's got one comfy slippered foot in the care home. He needs a month skating backyard pools with Christian Fletcher. Interested to hear what you and Charlie make of it.
Well, look at that. Exactly what we were talking about. I think that was fascinating content. So I disagree there. I think it was fascinating content to get a look into how truly bizarre Kelly Slater's mind is. But I totally agree that Kelly's gotten soft and Kelly is unhappy because he's gotten soft. He doesn't even know it. Kelly needs to go do something outside of a Kelly. He precisely go either skate with who did
Christian
he say?
Fletcher.
Yeah. Christian Fletcher, or, you know, do something totally unexpected, do something that isn't, you know, trying to suck the spotlight. And Kelly's got to break this thing somehow. And it ain't going to help just having people stroke his ego all the time. What Kelly needs is not going to be found in more praise.
Yeah.
So we're doing Kelly a favor here.
Yeah.
We're giving Kelly what he needs.
So I understand, like part of me watching it sympathized with Kelly and understood he's going through all these existential crises, you know, where like he's not the top of his game anymore. So he's focused on, he's trying to meditate. And he's the one thing I can't relate to with him is the ego. He's got a level of ego that is unrelatable to me. So for me watching it, I almost don't understand why he's struggling with these things. Like, dude, we all are aware you're not the best surfer anymore in most conditions. If the waves are big, barreling reef passes, sure, he's the best. But in 9 out of 10 of the venues on tour, 10 out of the 11, you're not the best surfer. And on most days, you're not the best surfer. We've accepted that. So by the way, you've got plenty of other things going on in your life. Focus on those things, take a bow and exit. It's no big deal. We all love you. What's bizarre to me is that he hasn't reconciled those things and his body isn't performing the way that he wants to perform. And he's still clamoring to have moments of that. And so in lieu of accepting that, he's turning to meditation, which is great. And he's got these friends that he's bringing around, this guy, Charlie Goldsmith, who's a healer, a TV healer, basically, who he's got around giving him these positive affirmations. And I'm looking at it going, Charlie never said anything nearly profound.
Not even. It was straight cliche.
Straight cliche and only reflected positive affirmations to you that are so obvious. It was bizarre. Like, who is this guy? And then failed completely at his job. Hey, Kelly, you've got this dialed. You're the man. You invented this machine. Then Kelly goes out and falls on his two waves and gets sixes, which we know that's what he's going to do because we've been watching him do it for 5 years now and losing in the middle of the contest to Leonardo Fioravanti. Like, none of that is bad, Kelly. Like, it's all good. We get it. We accept you as you are. Why are you still so attached and seeking all this spirituality? And so the existential crises thing becomes the storyline.
Completely.
That's now the conflict, is Kelly having a battle with his own existence about what his value in this world that he's already proven his value in.
I think obviously it's so common. Like, you think from the outside, you look at somebody wildly successful, wealthy, handsome. I mean, Kelly honestly has it all, right? You
absolutely don't,
he has phenomenal ability, ridiculously handsome, the life that he's led is
wealth.
Every health, wealth, every bit of it, right?
Adoration.
Every bit of it. Still sad, still sad. And of course, that story is a story as old as time, right? But I think one of the reasons why, for Kelly at least, just stop thinking about your fucking self, right?
That's what the ego thing that I couldn't relate to is that.
You're so narcissistic, or you come off so narcissistic, you have to have a healer positively affirming you. What if for 1 minute, Kelly, I think it is honest to goodness, it's an impossible conundrum, because what makes those kinds of people so good is that they're narcissists, right?
Of course.
They focus solely on themselves, and that's how they get to be so good. That's why they are so good in I think any field, right? From the sciences to literature to, I mean, great things are usually done by pretty rotten people, and not that Kelly's pretty rotten, but just this narcissism. The one thing Kelly needs is to be not narcissistic anymore, to not think about himself, to think about somebody other than him. And that's the one thing he'll never be able to do. And so I feel with Kelly, which this sound waves was such a peek into it, it's just going to be this slow slide into more and more misery, where he'll try to dig his heels in by having more and more positive affirmation, more and more stuff around him to affirm Kelly Slater. And none of that's going to work.
And that's why he does perform best at big barreling Chopu and Pipe, is because those the stimulus in those is so intense and the risk is so high that you can't focus on anything else. That's kind of the only space where he has to abandon all ego, all everything, and you just let muscle memory and instinct take over, and then he performs
completely.
So that's what he's trying to hit, that level of enlightenment at the wave pool, which is just so ridiculous. Like, you could never hit that level of being attuned with just the world in the wave pool, because it's a manufactured thing and there's a ton of people around you. And that's why he's having this healer trying to coax him into this headspace that you could never find in that environment.
No. Well, and you're never going to be able to, I don't think, in even out of the water, right? Like, Kelly, no. Thinking about Kelly, Kelly meditating about Kelly, Kelly, you know, I mean, I just think this constant barrage of self is what drives people to straight lunacy.
Of course.
Or at least makes them miserable.
But we are dumping more on top of that by even talking about him.
Yeah.
Because how could he be anything else? He's for 30 years had tons of attention. It's the same thing for Justin Bieber or anybody else. It's like, if you're just surrounding yourself with people who love and adore you and only tell you yes, you become, it's just an echo chamber of your own
ego.
Yeah.
It was a fascinating peak. And I was sort of surprised that Kelly allowed that.
Me too.
Like,
that was the other text I got from somebody was like, how did Kelly greenlight this?
It's not flattering.
But he thinks it is.
He must.
I think that there's a part of him, that's where the ego blinds you from things. There's a part of him that says like, look, I'm opening up about this existential crisis that I'm having. And so that makes it relatable.
Well, and I'm sure Kelly's DMs and messages and all that were like, Kelly, thank you so much. I've been struggling myself with, you know, issues of self-doubt and all this kind of stuff. And you're watching you struggle too. Just, I'm sure that his... it's just like an overwhelming flood of positive reaction to that sound waves in his world.
Yeah.
Well, and he would probably, you know, rightly or wrongly say, well, then there's assholes who shit on me. They always shit on me. Right. Like
and they devote 20 minutes of a podcast to it.
Precisely. But I'm sure like Kelly would say he'll throw away negative criticism when that's the only thing, to be honest, that he should be embracing right now.
I think that it should be listening.
Yeah, but he should be listening to the negativity
and
just thinking, you know, you're right. I think about myself way too much and I'm only surrounded by people telling me what I want to hear.
Yeah.
That's it.
So again, he's such an interesting character and I'm thrilled to have him.
Fascinating. I mean,
because the other 8 episodes of Soundwaves are so
Who's even in them? I haven't even seen one until now.
Seth Moniz was the first. Connor Coffin was the third. The one that was actually worth watching was Jack Robinson at the box.
Because his dad is there and stuff?
No, it was strictly because
he
dominates that spot and the waves were all time. And he came up against Felipe Toledo, who was too afraid to go on a wave.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like it happened that all these external factors were the perfect confluence that created a conflict. Most of them don't have any conflict in them.
It's just walking around and doing
with
stuff.
With a boring person.
Yeah.
You know, walking around with Seth Moniz or Connor Coffin, who I'm sure are great people, but they don't have any conflict or crises that they're struggling with. So for that reason, the Kelly one was fantastic.
Epic. I mean, it's...
But again, you wonder, like, Kelly, do you understand how this is perceived by the public? It makes you look...
But maybe also the public, besides us, I mean, the general public might think, oh, isn't that sweet? Look at this... You know, really great guy, and he's just humanized now. I understand his struggles, like anybody could. I mean, but yeah.
It's so unrelatable. The stuff he's going through, I don't know. I see both sides. I guess I see what you're saying.
I'm sure that's the feedback he's getting, but I don't think that's valid feedback. I think the reason you're sad, Kelly, is because you're just fucking thinking about yourself, and you got to stop thinking about yourself, buddy. But you can never do that, because that's what makes you Kelly. So it's you're in this yin yang.
It's great.
That you'll never get out of and we can just watch.
I love it.
Oh, beautiful.
I'm fascinated by it.
Oh, we got,
I want more.
We got 30 more years. Don't worry. Well, Kelly is going nowhere.
And we've got the HBO 24/7 thing coming up too. Totally. So we were talking right about what the conflict will be with that.
It's Kelly versus Kelly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is awesome.
I mean, I hope that the HBO producers are savvy enough, and this is rude, but because obviously they're savvy producers, but I hope they're savvy enough. I hope that it's not a Kelly Slater sycophantic thing. Like, I hope they really get in there and kind of at least tease that story out for the viewer.
I know. And you know, I think this one just happened by happenstance. I don't think that the producers designed it this way.
No.
I think the producers were in earnest, you know, just trying to document. They didn't realize the conflict that was actually taking place.
Do you think there's people in Santa Monica's high tower who watched that and were like, oh, whoa. No. I mean, this is because they don't care. It's all content for them.
To be honest, I don't think they even saw it the way that you and I see it.
Sure.
I think
they saw it as Kelly being
everybody
open
who
and
has any general interest in surfing venerates Kelly and doesn't see any of the flaws.
Yeah.
I really do. I think so. Like, if they get the opportunity to turn their camera on him, they start just praising and adulating, because he is that beautiful and he is well spoken and he is that talented and athletic and all those things that you get
sucked into
his aura, you know, and you become a fan. How could you not be a fan? So there needs to be a real objective producer who just sees things really black and white. It's so much easier to find flaw in Henry Ford, who is, you know, a racist. Yeah. Like there's a lot of other people, even like Steve Jobs, you know, who isn't paying child support.
Oh, yeah, megalomaniac.
Like, there's those guys have so much more kind of obvious villain character. Kelly isn't really a villain.
I mean, Kelly's thing is just narcissism. Again, though, in the way that probably LeBron James is, or that Kobe Bryant is. You get great at that level by this focus on self that's so severe that, you know, nothing else gets in your way.
And that's, Kelly worded it that way too. He even said, like, I've been a perfectionist my whole life, so this is very challenging for me to enter this next phase, you know, where you can't be the best at stuff.
Nope. Sorry, Kelly.
Yeah.
But you're the best to watch.
Yeah. The most fascinating figure we have. So yep. I'm thrilled about that. Man, again, please, Gabriel Medina, open up. John Florence. The other thing is, I don't know that they even have it in them.
I don't.
But it's not about them opening up. It's just they're not that interesting of people.
And also, they don't have that kind of narcissistic, like that deep level thing that Kelly has. Yeah. As athletes are great to watch. Just like 90% of the, or 99% of the NFL or NBA or, you know, tennis or anything is filled with great athletes, or movies, right, are filled with great actors.
Yeah.
But it's the truly, truly, like the Marlon Brandos, who are just straight up. They're so great because they are so, something is so damaged in their brain.
So what is Meryl Streep's secret damage?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. But
she looks pristine to me. She's got a clean track record. We've never heard any skeletons in her closet.
Let's dig in. Let's dig into Meryl Streep.
What could it be? Ooh. What is Meryl dealing with? You think she's killed somebody?
Maybe.
But
because it has to be, though, ongoing. Like, she'd have to be a serial killer. Maybe that's what she is. Meryl, I think, would have to have something.
Is there a...
It's got to be current, ongoing.
Is there a current unsolved list of murders?
Oh, yeah.
That we can ascribe to her?
Probably.
Like, is there some killer on the loose right now that, like, police have collected evidence, they know that there's five or six connected, but, and they're all in California, somewhere around the Hollywood area, except she goes on remote. And then it turns out there's a similar murder in Australia.
That's so perfect. This conspiracy, the Meryl Streep is a serial killer, I feel is a good one. Yeah. I feel this one has legs.
I need to start. This could be an epic podcast series if I devote enough research to it.
Yep. We should just go. Let's can this one and just start up the 18 episodes of really proving that Meryl Streep is likely a serial killer.
What is her method of dispatching humans?
It could be, I mean, she plays so many roles so well that it could be any, we're going to have to get into this.
Strangulation?
I think she would, I'm going to say sometimes pillow over the head while sleeping. I feel she'd be a good pillower.
Asphyxiation?
Yeah, but not like a sexual way, like in a more Nurse Ratched kind of way.
Hmm.
I see her like hair kind of getting undid as she's like holding the pillow down.
Yeah.
Can you really die with a pillow over your face, speaking of?
Yeah.
You can?
I think so.
You can't breathe like real slowly through the pillow?
Maybe if you could do Kelly's meditations and calm your breathing enough to where you just do these little micro puffs.
Some Wim Hof breathing.
I feel like it's just a battle of wills between the pillow pusher and the one being asphyxiated. They're exerting a lot of energy.
Sure.
Because the pillow is porous. So you have to really use a lot of pressure.
But what if you just lean in to get, like, you don't fight it as the person getting pillowed? And just try to breathe through the pores. You know,
that's my point is, but you're only getting micro breaths. So you need to last longer in your micro breaths than they have the energy to force it
precisely
down your face. And I can outlast Streep, I think.
Do you think that there's a market for a pillow that if it got pushed down, there's like an air pocket inside and you can breathe?
Oh, interesting.
Should we make this?
No.
Like just in case Meryl Streep sneaks into your home at night and tries to, you'll be okay.
If we do, we need to align the release of that product with the podcast so that as we're talking about this real threat of being asphyxiated, we then go to a pillow commercial.
I think we're really onto something here.
Okay.
I think this is $1 million idea. Multi-million.
At least.
How much did the cereal podcast make?
Who knows?
Lots.
I can't even count that out.
Well, then this is a movie too that stars Meryl Streep.
Who would play Meryl Streep in the movie about Meryl Streep?
That's a great question.
Saoirse Ronan.
Oh, perfect.
Or is it?
Saoirse, or what about, I could see, to be quite honest, I could see Shiv from from Succession.
She's got similar weird face.
Exactly.
But I don't know if Shiv has all the chops, the acting chops.
She's British. Did you know that?
But is Meryl Streep British?
No, but if she can act that good as a weird, like, American,
yeah,
then I think she might. We're, okay. All right. Yeah, we'll have to put a poll. Can we do polls?
Mm-hmm. Instagram polls. Wait, what do you, where do you want to do a poll?
Like, I feel we need two polls so far. One was how many men Manscaped?
Oh, right.
Is there like an app that we can put, yeah, I can plug into Beach Crit?
Yeah.
How many men Manscaped and who should play Meryl Streep? We'll give like five options.
In the story of her on a murderous rampage.
Yeah. Wow.
So you were saying it's not sexual. I feel like
you feel it's sexual.
A lot of murder is very, very closely tied to sexuality, like that visceral rage.
Has Meryl Streep ever played a sexy character? I mean, I'm sure she did when she was. Well, I'll have to go back in the archives. But Meryl Streep in my lifetime, I don't think it's ever
adaptation. The Charlie Kaufman film.
Yeah,
she has an affair with Chris Cooper's character.
That's true.
And they're doing a bit of drugs.
That's true. That
he's synthesizing from like a plant.
He was making tulips or something. Or what did he? He was
orchids.
Orchids.
That was the orchid thief.
Yeah.
So there was like a sexiness to that.
Okay.
But it's an older woman type of cougar sexiness.
But that's okay.
But she's not. She doesn't exude sex appeal.
What does she wear when she murders?
Pajamas.
Like silken?
The ones that we talked about last time. Man. The button up with a collar. They got to be silken so you can't hear her coming.
Yeah, no. Just
she's a silent. And she's doing it with the pillow, so that makes sense.
All of it. Sweeps into your room, pillow over face.
Yeah.
Nobody ever heard or saw her.
Nope.
That's how she gets away with it. So, I mean, just think too. Meryl Streep could get into anybody's house.
For sure. You would let her in.
I mean, you'd let her in and then you'd be dead. She just has to, all you have to be is Home Alone.
And then she's
knocking
just
on the door. Hi, yeah. Meryl Streep.
Exactly.
Can I come in my
You're
pajamas?
Welcome in.
Yeah, please.
Can come I tuck? In. She'll be like, can I tuck you in? Here, let me lull you to sleep. And then as soon as you take your last breath, she leans in and says, you've been streeped.
Oh, man. Yeah. This movie.
And she leaves one rose on you.
This movie's going to be
one rose petal.
This movie's going to be a smash. This podcast is going to be a smash, too.
I agree.
I mean, this
how,
one.
How could you not love it?
But our next, I mean, our Finding Meryl Streep. Because
the
Streep Files, the
yeah, something.
Oh, Bad Streeps. I think we can play on Street and Streep a little bit.
Totally.
Naughty Streep.
Yeah, you're on the right track.
We'll get something.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm excited for this new podcast.
Okay, cool. Let's actually take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. We'll be back with Barrel and Mike.
Okay.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
All right, Chaz, we're back. What do you think that those sponsors were? They auto-populate from our ad agency.
Really? Yeah. They auto-populate. I'm going to say...
There's two.
I'm going to say some online meal thing.
Oh, good pick.
Blue Box or something, whatever it's called. And then I'm going to say removable tattoo.
Interesting.
What are they?
I don't know.
Oh.
I'm going to guess...
Oh, they just come in.
I'm going to get, yeah.
Oh, epic.
They just automatically populate. Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
For sure, a
blue box then.
And I think that they're different regionally. Like they geo-target.
Are they going to be listening to me pissed that we're poking fun of them, even though we don't know what they are?
I don't care. I'm going to guess that it was Fidelity.com and a language learning app.
Oh, we're going to put money on just one of them. I'm going to do a money on a food prep service thing.
It's a good call. Yeah. There's a lot of those. Yeah. But the problem is if that was the actual commercial, but you just named a competing brand.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't say Blue. I'm going to say
well, you said it wrong anyways.
Yeah. What is
it's not even? Blue Box. So you're fine. All right. Well, listeners will have to weigh in on whether we got those correct or not. But we're back with the most important segment of the show, Barrel or Nah.
So excited.
All right. Barrel or Nah, dressing up for Halloween.
Barrel for children. I'm going to go barrel for adult too, even though I haven't dressed up for Halloween in 20, 30, however many years since I was 10. But yep. I'm going to go barrel.
Okay.
Just because I saw one recently. Kid had a Halloween festival at school, early, you know, so all the kids dressed up and whatnot. And a family, Japanese family, beautiful, wonderful Japanese family, mom dressed up, all these costumes were homemade. Dad dressed up like a sushi chef. Mom dressed up like Kikkoman. Baby dressed up like sushi.
No
yeah.
way.
Yeah. All homemade epic costumes.
That is amazing.
Yep. It was. So that's, if I hadn't seen that, I would have said nah. But that recently in my memory, I'm all barrel.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So if you're going to put that much effort in and it's family, then I'm fine with it.
And you've like crafted the thing. I'm like, what about though? You as a single man, are you still single?
Yeah.
You as a single man, you're not down with Sexy Kitten, Naughty Angel,
no.
even Naughty really or Devil.
Not. No, I'm really not.
Have you ever done Halloween dress-up play, bedroom play?
No, I've never done dress-up play bedroom at all.
Oh, we need to
Halloween
get,
or otherwise.
We should get a dress-up bedroom play sponsor along with Manscaped.
I'd be fine with that.
We both try something.
I'm down to explore. Here's the thing, dude. It's not like I'm against the idea. I just, you know, haven't tired it out the old basics.
Yeah.
You know?
So
I'll get to that eventually.
Okay, so what was your last costume? Oh, we're going to go real quick. What was your last costume and what was your best costume?
I have not dressed up. I would love to answer these questions. I just don't dress up.
You never did, even as a kid.
As a kid, I did,
what
I
was,
guess a little bit.
What was your best costume
okay,
as a kid?
I remember being mortified and embarrassed about a Gumby costume that like my mom bought. And then I don't know if I had a say in it or maybe I thought it would be a good idea. And then I put it on and it was like tight around my crotch area. It was like, I was very uncomfortable in it.
So you got traumatized early with costumery.
And then, but she's like, I bought this and it's dress up day at school. You have to wear this. And so I was forced to go to school in this ill fitting, you know, cheap.
Makes sense. Why you don't like dress up.
I was horrified.
My best one. I've had a lot of good ones as a kid. I mean, I haven't done it yet. I dressed up as Billy Joel in fifth grade. It's pretty good.
Were you a fan of his music?
I don't think that I necessarily was. I think my dad had a Billy Joel record, and I just thought Billy Joel looked really cool on the record.
That's so funny.
And so I dressed up as Billy Joel.
But did other kids know what?
Hell no. Yeah, nobody ever knew. So in sixth grade, I chased Billy Joel dressing up as Ben Johnson. Do you remember Ben Johnson?
No.
Ben Johnson was the Canadian sprinter who won the 1988, I do believe, 88 Olympics, or maybe it was 84. Yeah, I think 88. And got his medal stripped for steroids.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I went in Canadian clothes with a cut medal around my neck, and I went blackface, as horrible as it is to say.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. The disgraced Olympian, Ben Johnson, was my greatest costume of all
time. Were you showing other skin?
So your arms
are white?
No, my hands. I had a sweater on. My hands were black, and my face was black.
Wow.
And my hair, I dyed my hair black.
Did you get ridiculed?
No.
Did anybody know who you were?
Of course not. Okay. But I thought that was such a banging costume. Ben Johnson.
Are there...
Disgraced Olympian.
Are there photos of this that exist?
I'm sure there are somewhere, and I'm sure that they will come out when I run for president or when I'm getting nominated to be a Supreme Court justice, and I'll have to step down.
Well, I mean, you could just get canceled as a podcaster and a writer and a surf writer.
On blackface?
Yeah.
Sixth grade blackface?
I think you did.
Yeah. I wasn't like, the thing was, I didn't even think of it that way. That Ben Johnson was just black. And I if I was doing the costume, I wasn't like mocking any, I mean, it was mocking him, I guess.
But no, you're not even mocking him almost. It is kind of
how do you go as Ben Johnson?
Homage.
Yeah. I couldn't do it white. So right. Yeah, for me, it was just the costume. It was like, if I was going to go as the Incredible Hulk, I would paint myself green.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I'm not convinced that the whole
blackface shaming
thing is racist.
I like that two white surf broadcasters can talk about about blackface not being racist.
Well, so there's an episode, I mentioned this show last time. It's called I'm Sorry on Netflix, about these parents raising their kid. And the little girl, she's 6 years old, maybe 8 years old, doesn't like, the storyline is she doesn't like her friend at school anymore because of her skin color.
Ooh.
And the parents are like, great, we're raising a racist, you know, like this can't happen. And my thought on it was like, I don't know if that's, I know that is the definition of racism. However, the girl isn't factoring in the culture. I don't even remember what race the girl was that she was talking about, but she wasn't factoring in her culture or any other data points. It was strictly, I like the color of my own skin, and that person has different color skin than I do, and therefore I don't like it. And so to me, I was almost thinking it's not racist. It's strictly an aesthetic choice.
Yeah.
For this 8-year-old kid, she doesn't have hatred for a culture. She doesn't have any, she's not stereotyping any personality traits or behaviors because of some other person that she met with that skin color. She's strictly making an aesthetic assessment of something that she's comfortable and used to with something that she's not used to. And she has a preference for the color orange instead of red, basically, is what it is.
She's aesthetically, though, what would you say? Racist? What would the color? I mean, colorist is
she's what she is. She's a colorist. Yeah. Yeah. And then she ends up being best friends at the end of the episode because they liked the same food or something like that. You know what I mean? So like they cleaned it up. But I was like, in my head, I was like, huh. This really calls into question the whole nature
of racism.
Racism.
Colorism.
It needs to be a little bit more sophisticated, our assessment of racists, real racists, who are going to do damage.
Yeah.
You know,
I hear you.
Prevent people from getting jobs or whatever it is. Anyways, if that photo does come out, you will be canceled.
I'm done.
Officially.
I'm done.
All right. Barrel or Nah also fits in with today's show. Quitting surfing.
I'm going to say
Matt Warshaw, Drew Campion.
Oh, Drew Campion doesn't surf anymore either?
He hasn't surfed in 8 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to say nah. Definitely 1,000% nah. I will surf a shortboard until the grave.
All right.
Never a mid-length, never a sup.
All right.
Longboard, foamy longboard every once in a while, but not a serious longboard ever.
So Warshaw, I think, still identifies as a surfer.
Mm-hmm.
And like in his head, he's still surfing regularly, even though he doesn't get to the ocean, but once a year. Drew Campion, on the other hand, I feel like has actually just reconciled that he's not surfing anymore.
Does he? So if Drew Campion described himself, like used 8 words to describe yourself, surfer would not be in there.
No.
He'd say
he might,
writer,
I think
editor.
He'd talk about writing, being a father, a husband.
Where would surfer come in your, like David Lee Scales is a, where do you put surfer in your own descriptor?
If we were having a real candid talk off the record, it would be very high on the list.
Yeah.
If we were just having a, if I'm like meeting somebody for the first, let's say a girl on a date or something like that, I wouldn't even mention it.
Okay.
It wouldn't even be in the top 10.
Sure. Sure.
Because it comes with so much baggage.
But I'll say the way you think of yourself.
Yeah.
Not surfer. Yeah. So surfer is really high on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it informs my worldview.
Sure. I mean, it'd be very high on my list, too.
Yeah. It informs, like, all of my decision-making. I, you know, life choices, I run through the filter of
surf.
The way that I view surfing, yeah.
Sure.
And the role that plays.
So I'm no barrel.
No
barrel.
Surfing. I absolutely am no barrel on this. And I would argue that Drew Campion might even have more sympathy for your role in surfing had he been cleansed by the waters of the Puget Sound.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Oh, maybe Drew Campion and I go surfing. You think he'd go surfing with me?
If you could talk him into surfing, yes, he would go with you.
Okay. Great.
All right. Final barrel or not? Hiring a life coach.
So nah. So nah that I don't even know how to, I mean, therapist, fine. Like, go to therapy, go see a psychologist, go see a counselor. Any of that, sure. 1,000% wonderful profession. Life coach, I mean, sounds like an old silly thing to say, but I don't even know what a life coach is. And to me, all a life coach does is affirm the narcissism, which again is likely the root of your, or a root of your problem.
So I think that's the problem, is that life coach is this nebulous term. Whereas if you say a physician, you know what a physician is and they were vetted out. I feel like I could be a life coach.
I mean, I think we are on this podcast.
I think we are too. We're certainly therapists. So the idea that like you don't really have, there's not a rigorous process to become a life coach makes me suspicious to it. I also feel like that way with psychics. Like, I'm sure there are people who have some sort of special
extra
gift.
Extra ability? Yeah.
Yeah, that they're tuned into the world in different ways. But for every one of them, there's 30
hacks.
Just complete charlatans.
Sure.
You know, and so it gives the whole profession or way of life a bad rap. That's kind of how I feel life coaching might be.
Life coach, though, I just think it's so, like, when people look back at, you know, the mid-2000s or whatever, you know, the 2010 to 2020, life coach is going to be a punchline, laugh totally. Line, just totally. Like, you know, giant cell phones. We look back at giant cell phones, not even that, but like, it's going to be a marker, an embarrassing marker of the age.
Because we ran out of problems so much so.
Precisely.
And we had so much excessive income and wealth that we could just hire somebody to walk around with us going, you know, I think you're making good decisions about your life.
Which 1,000% back to Kelly Slater, full circle.
That's why I brought him up.
Exactly. Yeah. But Kelly's problem is just that. It's everything is too good. Yeah. And so now he needs a life coach to affirm who knows what. You invented the wave, Kelly. Like I guess that's what Kalani said to him.
Yeah.
You made that seemed so canned. Somehow they were like feeding her lines. She goes up to him on the bike and says, "Hey, Kelly, how are you feeling today?" And
I'm kind of nervous.
Yeah. And then, "Kelly, you've got this. You made this wave. You created this wave." It sounded so canned.
If it wasn't, that's even worse.
I mean, that's ridiculous. Then Kelly's living in a sitcom.
Yeah. If that is like the depth and, or let's say the, how pedestrian his concerns are about what he's going to do, then that's pathetic. He should be way past that.
I don't think it was canned, but I do think that the WSL was producing that. Like whoever was filming the camera saw Kalani and said, "Hey, Kalani, go up and talk to Kelly real quick."
And off the top of her head, that's the best.
Yeah, because she was very clearly stiff. But again, you're exactly right. If that was which is WSL, shame on you. Do your fucking job better. That kind of what cinema verite of documentary thing, fly on the wall stuff, if they're more or less plugging lines to people, which is, that is exactly what that would have been, then that's totally uninteresting and devalues the show, right?
Completely.
Like the sound waves thing, if you're going to be floating around capturing moments, well, it's really hard to do. Of course, when a camera's there, everybody acts weird, but that moment with her approaching Kelly did not seem either natural or native or anything.
No.
And what she said was, "So, Kelly, how are you feeling today?"
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. So hiring a life coach, we're going nah.
And if you have a life coach, fire him today or her.
One of my favorite jokes from George Carlin, he's like talking about self-help books. You know, you go into the bookstore and there's self-help books anywhere. If somebody else wrote a book, it's just called help. It's not self-help. You're going to somebody else for advice and they're giving it to you and you're reading their book about it. And yet there's an entire section of the bookstore that is self-help.
That's very funny.
That's just help.
George, God bless George Carlin.
I know.
Rest his soul.
That.
Yeah.
All right, Chaz. Well, this has been wonderful. Thanks to manscaped.com, promo code surfing. Thanks to Surfing Heritage and Culture Center for hosting us today.
Come visit Duke Kahanamoku Surfboards and say mele kilikimaka.
When am I going to see you again?
Next week, yeah.
Perfect. Friday of next week. Until then, Chaz.
Get barrel. Some